Sports from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center, and always on the Civic Media app.
President Trump's address to a joint session of Congress, his message to the American people and the world, and the stakes could not be higher. ABC News live coverage begins right now.
Tonight, on the 44th day of his presidency, with so much at stake, right here at home and across the globe, President Donald J. Trump, before a joint session of Congress, the American people, and the world. This is an ABC News special. The Presidential Address to the Nation and the Democratic Response. Now reporting from Washington, David Muir.
And good evening tonight from the nation's capital. We are just moments away from President Trump's address to a joint session of Congress and the American people. And make no mistake, the world will be watching this address to Congress as well, perhaps closer than it has in years, simply because of the news already made in these first 44 days of President Trump's presidency. New tariffs, obviously, the economy, his move on these tariffs in just the last 24 hours, and the Dow's response. The president's approach to the world, our allies, our adversaries, the Oval Office meeting with President Zelensky of Ukraine. We're told the theme of tonight's address will be the renewal of the American dream. Just before we came on the air, the president making his way from the White House to Capitol Hill, returning to the chamber for the first time since winning the 2024 election. The president and his party in control of Washington. Republicans are, of course, in control of the House and the Senate, with thin majorities, but in both majorities nonetheless. In just 6 weeks since the start of the second Trump presidency, the new administration has attempted an aggressive down
world. Specifically, he'll be talking about Ukraine and the push to get a peace agreement between Russia and Ukraine, and also the situation right now in the Middle East. Alex?
We are waiting for that iconic moment that most would think of as a moment from the State of the Union, when the Sergeant-at-Arms introduces the president, and then that slow walk down the aisle as members of Congress shake his hand and talk to him a little bit, take selfies. Any moment now, that should be getting underway. They are a little bit behind right now. Still some entrances to do, some announcements to make before it will be the president. ABC News national correspondent Stephen Portnoy here tonight as well. Stephen, good evening.
Good evening to you, Alex. In the galleries above the House chamber, I see guests such as Elon Musk, the presidential advisor, running the Doge effort, sitting in the First Lady's box. Also near him, the FBI director, Kash Patel. Sort of an extraordinary thing for an FBI director to be attending an event such as this. The speaker has extended invitations to conservative media hosts and an Israeli woman who was held hostage by Hamas. Democrats have extended many of their tickets to recently fired federal workers, including many veterans who've just been let go from various jobs across the government. The First Lady of the United States, Melania Trump, now entering. And you can hear the applause as she walks down the steps to take her seat in the First Lady's box. Congressional Democrats have been trying to come up with some sort of strategy to demonstrate their disapproval tonight. They've been warned not to bring props, we're told, but there's been a lot of talk about possibly Democrats might show up with egg cartons to demonstrate the price of eggs. Some Democrats have chosen to skip the speech. I'm noticing many Democratic women of the House and Senate are wearing hot pink tonight. Alex?
Those cheers right now for the First Lady. We wonder tonight, you remember last year for President Biden, there were Republicans who yelled out during his State of the Union. If Democrats will be yelling out tonight, if we will hear from them as a speech is being given. We will in moments see the president's cabinet, hear the announcement coming right now. The cabinet members are walking down the aisle. After the cabinet members enter, it will be the president here momentarily. As we wait, ABC's Steve Roberts, our political analyst. Steve, what are you going to be listening for tonight?
I'm going to be listening for what the president doesn't say, and particularly the price of eggs and the larger question of inflation. With all of the excitement and all of the flurry of activity in Washington over the last 4 or 5 weeks, what hangs over his head really is what he's inherited, and that's the problem of inflation. CNN polls showed recently that 62% of Americans wanted him to do more about inflation. A Reuters poll showed only 39% had confidence in his economic policies. So this was the issue more than any other, Alex, that helped elect him president. The single problem of Americans in their budgets trying to afford gas and groceries, it was more than any other issue, propelled him into his second term. But now he is the president. He inherits that problem. He inherits the blame in the same way that Joe Biden inherited the blame. And that's the issue that hangs over his head tonight, because inflation, more than any other issue, affects every single American family every day. And you can't talk your way out of it, Alex.
The members of the cabinet slowly making their way down, chatting with members as they walk down the aisle, led by Secretary of State Marco Rubio, RFK Jr., the health secretary, also chatting it up as he walks in. ABC News White House correspondent Karen Travers. Karen, what else do we expect him to say tonight?
You know, I think we'll hear from the president a very big focus on what he has done so far, because the president's going to get into that room tonight and see the Republicans gathered on one side, and he will get a raucous reception from them. This is a president who loves that type of environment. And frankly, Alex, he hasn't had an event like this since the campaign trail. You know, he probably misses being in front of a crowd like this. So I think for the president, we'll be looking to see how much he veers off script. Aides had said that the speech was likely to be about an hour, but all were hinting at us today that this could be a very lengthy set of remarks from the president, because he will probably do what he does and go off the teleprompter. But I think when he does that, it's going to be talking about what he has done so far in these 6 weeks in office. You know, he is very quick to point to the executive actions they have taken to try and make up, keep good on campaign promises. But there hasn't been a lot of legislation happening up on Capitol Hill. There is a big push right now to move forward on big legislation that tackles the president's priorities on border security, tax policy, energy policy. But that's going to take a while, maybe months, to get that together. They're still working out how they even get to that point. So for the president, what he has done since taking office on January 20th is executive actions, executive orders. Some of them have more heft to them, some do not. But it's the way that he can go out there and try to show the American people that he's doing something. Alex, I think what we're also looking to see is, what does he say about tariffs? Because that was the big headline today. The president putting 25% tariffs on all products coming into the U.S. from Mexico and Canada, adding another 10% tariff on Chinese products in addition to what has already been in place. And this is sparking concerns about a trade war. Canada has promised retaliation, said that they're going to put their own 25% tariff on major economic goods coming into Canada. Mexico is threatening this. They're waiting to see if they can negotiate out of this over the next couple of days. But Alex, this is a big deal to what Steve was talking about, you know, bringing down cost and helping the average American. These tariffs and the president's approach right now on trade and the economy are likely to have a real impact on everyday Americans. One estimate says maybe $2,000 a year would be what the average household would be paying because of these tariffs. And tonight, we'll see the president likely trying to tout why this is the right thing to do, because in his view, he thinks countries have been taking advantage of this country for far too long.
You can hear behind us right now the room as members of Congress and the guests and the cabinet, everybody is chatting it up right now. There are members of Congress who are lining that aisle, waiting for the president to come in and make his way up to the rostrum, as it's called, the wooden podium setup that you would think of, called the rostrum in the House chamber. The designated survivor tonight being Veterans Affairs Secretary Doug Collins. If something were to go terribly wrong tonight, and the president and everybody above Collins in the line of succession were unable to lead, that then he would become the president in that moment. He is sitting out tonight. ABC's Stephen Portnoy, all of those lining that aisle, they want that moment with the president.
Well, they certainly do. And, you know, the tradition has it that people stake out their positions on the center aisle for hours for the opportunity to shake the president's hand. And so you can imagine that there are people, particularly on the right side of the aisle, who are very excited about that opportunity. I might say, you know, we care a lot about nomenclature here in D.C. You know, this is not a State of the Union address. A lot of people are probably wondering why. The Constitution calls on the president to deliver a report to the Congress from time to time on the State of the Union. That's in Article 2, Section 3. But for much of our history, that report was delivered not to the House and Senate in joint session, but instead in writing as an annual message. The tradition of delivering the speech from the House chamber began with Woodrow Wilson, the modern tradition, in 1913. We typically here do not call the first speech to a joint session of a president's term in his first year a State of the Union. Why? Because it's generally thought that the president has not had enough time to prepare a fulsome report on the state of things in the country in his first few months in office. The White House is keeping that tradition, calling this an address to a joint session, despite the fact that, of course, Donald Trump has spent time in the White House before. He certainly has a sense of the national landscape, and he has plenty to say about it. This will be a theme about the theme generally is about what the president is looking for, talking about the golden age returning to America and all the things he wants Congress to do, certainly a vision and agenda speech. But this is not, technically, as much as this matters, a State of the Union speech, Alex.
That may be true, Stephen, but don't we think tonight will be more saying what he has already done in 43 days instead of saying what his big visions are going to be?
Well, there's no doubt about that. I mean, the president intends to focus on what he sees as strong achievements. It's only been 43 days since Donald Trump took the oath of office. He's going to undoubtedly talk about the way that there's been a dramatic drop off in illegal border crossings. He's going to talk about all the things that he wants to get done. But, you know, look, there are a lot of things that have to happen. We are 10 days away from a shutdown deadline, and there is no agreement tonight on a plan to fund the government past next Friday, March 14th. Speaker Johnson says he intends to release the text of a short-term continuing resolution, a stopgap measure, by the end of this week, but there's no guarantee that it will pass with bipartisan support, which would be necessary to avoid a shutdown. And the speech comes as Republicans are trying to thread the needle on what the president has been calling one big, beautiful bill that would enact his border and energy priorities, extend and expand his tax cuts, and also cut future deficits over the next 10 years by $2 trillion. The president has promised in all of this that entitlements, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security will not be touched. But you know, Alex, there's a great deal of concern Democrats are focused on that Medicaid is being eyed for cuts because of the way that that reconciliation bill in the House has been written, directing the Energy and Commerce Committee to deliver nearly $900 billion in reductions. And the thinking is the only way to do that is to take on Medicaid. Again, congressional leadership on the Republican side denies it. That's their intent. And the president has said that those entitlement programs will not be touched.
Any moment now, we expect the president to come through the doors in the back of the chamber for them to swing open, the announcement to be made on this comeback night for President Trump tonight after years of indictments and lawsuits, even his own party turning on him for a while. He comes back tonight stronger than ever among Republicans, very much holding power in the Republican Party tonight. And when it comes, Stephen, to members of the Supreme Court who are in the room tonight, four sitting justices who are in the room.
Four sitting justices, one retired justice, Anthony Kennedy. This is not the first time, by the way, that retired Justice Kennedy has been in the House chamber for the speech, but we see four of the justices led by the Chief Justice, John Roberts.
And we pause now.
Mr. Speaker,
now we hear the introduction.
The President of the United States.
William McFarland there, the House Sergeant at Arms. President Trump now walking in. Flashes going off from cameras that are trained on him as he pumps his fist. He is now shaking hands of those lawmakers, primarily on the right, who have lined up to see him. The crowd, both members of Congress, guests who have been invited, who are up above and looking down from the gallery, they are cheering him on right now. Melania Trump among them. She is clapping as her husband walks into the chamber. You can hear it in the room right now. You can even hear some of what the members of Congress are saying to the president. Some are already saying thank you for what he has done. There was a member there a moment ago thanking him. This is that long, slow walk up the aisle to that rostrum to begin this speech here tonight. ABC News political analyst Steve Roberts. Steve, Elon Musk is in the room tonight, rode in the motorcade to get to the Capitol this evening. What does that mean?
Well, Elon Musk has played an enormous role for President Trump He has been his spear point in terms of slashing the federal government. And everybody keeps predicting that the richest man in the world and the most powerful man in the world can't coexist indefinitely. But so far, their relationship seems to have survived pretty well. And, Musk is, but he's an unusual figure because you just mentioned the cabinet officers. You mentioned the Supreme Court justices. All of those, you mentioned diplomats and American ambassadors, all of those people have to go through Senate confirmation. They have to answer questions on Capitol Hill. They have to submit their records to scrutiny. They have to make promises and pledges of what they're going to do in office. And then they have to survive a Senate vote. Elon Musk, none of that. Never had to answer a question from a single senator. Never had to reveal his finances or his background. Never had to face a vote in the U.S. Senate. It's truly extraordinary, Alex, that in a world where virtually everybody in that chamber either has been elected to office or has been approved by the Senate, one person has never had to face that scrutiny, and he's probably the second most powerful man in that room, and that's Elon Musk.
Tonight, Elon Musk has dressed up. He's got a dark suit on and a tie, not his normal Make America Great Again black baseball cap and a T-shirt with a coat over it. The president now saying hello to the justices of the Supreme Court going down the line, shaking their hands, saying hello to them. Stephen Portnoy, he's saying hello to members of the court who they have cases before them that will impact what he's trying to do.
Two of whom he appointed, Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett. He's now shaking the hands of the retired Justice Anthony Kennedy. It seems to be in a rather extended conversation with the Supreme Court justices who are here. Should also point out, Alex, as the president was walking down the center aisle, we got a first glimpse of the kind of demonstration that Democrats are going to be making. There's a New Mexico Democrat named Melanie Stansbury who had a sign in her hand that read, "This is not normal." She was dressed in all pink, and she flashed the sign as the cameras could see it as the president was walking down the center aisle. And you can hear the chants here in the chamber of the USA from the right side of the aisle. And it's Republicans, and there's Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene of Georgia wearing a red hat. It doesn't say maggots, as Trump was right about everything. I can also tell you, Alex, it was quite a thing to have the president come through the center aisle doors of the House chamber. My mind flashed back to that day on January 6, 2021. It was that same set of doors that were blocked by furniture and doorkeepers to keep out rioters on January 6th.
And he comes back tonight. He is at the microphone. He is smiling, handing a copy of his speech to the vice president behind him right now, turning around. Again, taking in the applause coming from members of Congress and the guests who are in the room tonight. Unbuttoned his jacket as he gets ready on the rostrum to begin his address to the joint session of Congress. This is a moment that, as Stephen has talked about, seems a lot like a State of the Union. It is very similar in many ways. He will talk about the State of the Union tonight, but this is not one. The crowd continuing to cheer. Speaker Johnson and the Vice President behind the President tonight with their copies of that speech now. We understand it likely is going to go, at least scripted, about an hour, but assuming it goes off the teleprompter a bit, could go quite a bit longer. It is going to be a lot of this tonight, a lot of cheering on applause lines, taking breaks. Here now, President Trump.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. It's a great honor. Thank you very much. Speaker Johnson, Vice President Vance, the First Lady of the United States, members of the United States Congress, thank you very much. And to my fellow citizens America is back. Six weeks ago, I stood beneath the dome of this Capitol and proclaimed the dawn of the golden age of America. From that moment on, it has been nothing but swift and unrelenting action to usher in the greatest and most successful era in the history of our country. We have accomplished more in 43 days than most administrations accomplished in 4 years or 8 years, and we are just getting started. Thank you. I return to this chamber tonight to report that America's momentum is back, our spirit is back, our pride is back, our confidence is back, and the American dream is surging bigger and better than ever before. The American dream is unstoppable, and our country is on the verge of a comeback, the likes of which the world has never witnessed and perhaps will never witness again. It's never been anything like it. The presidential election of November 5th was a mandate like has not been seen in many decades. We won all seven swing states, giving us an electoral college victory of 312 votes. We won the popular vote by big numbers and won counties in our country. In our country, 2,700 to 525, on a map that reads almost completely red for Republican. Now, for the first time in modern history, more Americans believe that our country is headed in the right direction than the wrong direction. In fact, it's an astonishing record. 27-point swing, the most ever. Likewise, small business optimism saw its single largest one-month gain ever recorded, a 41-point jump.
Members are directed to uphold and maintain decorum in the House and to cease any further disruptions. That's your warning.
That warning to Texas Democrat Al Green there, who's
members
been standing up and shouting.
Members are engaged in continuing breach of decorum, and the chair is prepared to direct the Sergeant-at-Arms to restore order to the joint session.
That getting a cheer now from Republicans in the chamber. Green continuing to shout.
Mr. Green, take your seat. Take your seat, sir. Take your seat. Finding that members continue to engage in willful and concerted disruption of proper decorum, the chair now directs the sergeant-at-arms to restore order. Remove this gentleman from the chamber.
Let me bring in ABC Stephen Portnoy here. Stephen, how unusual is this?
I have never seen anything like this, Alex. The sergeant-at-arms is now being directed to remove a congressman from the House chamber for interrupting the president's speech. Congressman Green was wrapping his cane and saying things that we couldn't quite pick up on mic. But now there seems to be a huddle around Congressman Green. They seem to be trying to talk to him. He's shouting back again at the president. And now he appears to be walking out of the chamber, escorted by the doorkeepers
Members
and the sergeant-at-arms.
To uphold and maintain decorum in the House. Mr. President,
during that,
continue.
The president smiling and shaking his head.
Over the
Green
past 6 weeks,
walking out. The president
I have signed
continued.
Nearly 100 executive orders and taken more than 400 executive actions, a record, to restore common sense, safety, optimism, and wealth all across our wonderful land. The people elected me to do the job, and I'm doing it. In fact, it has been stated by many that the first month of our presidency, it's our presidency, is the most successful in the history of our nation. By many. And what makes it even more impressive is that, do you know who number two is? George Washington. How about that? I don't know about that list, but we'll take it. Within hours of taking the oath of office, I declared a national emergency on our southern border, and I deployed the U.S. military and Border Patrol to repel the invasion of our country. And what a job they've done. As a result, illegal border crossings last month were by far the lowest ever recorded, ever. They heard my words and they chose not to come. Much easier that way. In comparison, under Joe Biden, the worst president in American history, there were hundreds of thousands of illegal crossings a month, and virtually all of them, including murderers, drug dealers, gang members, and people from mental institutions and insane asylums, were released into our country. Who would want to do that? This is my fifth such speech to Congress. And once again, I look at the Democrats in front of me, and I realize there is absolutely nothing I can say to make them happy or to make them stand or smile or applaud. Nothing I can do. I could find a cure to the most devastating disease, a disease that would wipe out entire nations, or announce the answers to the greatest economy in history, or the stoppage of crime to the lowest levels ever recorded. And these people sitting right here will not clap, will not stand, and certainly will not cheer for these astronomical achievements. They won't do it, no matter what. Five times I've been up here. It's very sad, and it just shouldn't be this way.
As the president talks about Democrats, they are holding up signs that read Musk steals and save Medicare as they continue to sit.
So Democrats sitting before me, for just this one night, why not join us in celebrating so many incredible wins for America? For the good of our nation, let's work together and let's truly make America great again. Every day my administration is fighting to deliver the change America needs to bring a future that America deserves. And we're doing it. This is a time for big dreams and bold action. Upon taking office, I imposed an immediate freeze on all federal hiring, a freeze on all new federal regulations, and a freeze on all foreign aid. I terminated the ridiculous Green New Scam. I withdrew from the unfair Paris Climate Accord, which was costing us trillions of dollars that other countries were not paying. I withdrew from the corrupt World Health Organization. And I also withdrew from the anti-American UN Human Rights Council. We ended all of Biden's environmental restrictions that were making our country far less safe and totally unaffordable. And importantly, we ended the last administration's insane electric vehicle mandate, saving our auto workers and companies from economic destruction. To unshackle our economy, I have directed that for every one new regulation, 10 old regulations must be eliminated, just like I did in my very successful first day. And in that first term, we set records on ending unnecessary rules and regulations like no other president had done before. We ordered all federal workers to return to the office. They will either show up for work in person or be removed from their job. And we have ended weaponized government where, as an example, a sitting president is allowed to viciously prosecute his political opponent, like me. How did that work out? Not too good. Not too good. And I have stopped all government censorship and brought back free speech in America. It's back. And 2 days ago, I signed an order making English the official language of the United States of America. I renamed the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America. And likewise, I renamed, for a great president, William McKinley, Mount McKinley again. Beautiful Alaska. We love Alaska. We've ended the tyranny of so-called diversity, equity, and inclusion policies all across the entire federal government and, indeed, the private sector and our military. And our country will be woke no longer. We believe that whether you are a doctor, an accountant, a lawyer, or an air traffic controller, you should be hired and promoted based on skill and competence, not race or gender. Very important. You should be hired based on merit. And the Supreme Court, in a brave and very powerful decision, has allowed us to do so. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. We have removed the poison of critical race theory from our public schools, and I signed an order making it the official policy of the United States government that there are only two genders, male and female. I also signed an executive order to ban men from playing in women's sports. Three years ago, Peyton McNabb was an all-star high school athlete, one of the best, preparing for a future in college sports. But when her girls' volleyball match was invaded by a male, he smashed the ball so hard in Peyton's face, causing traumatic brain injury, partially paralyzing her right side and ending her athletic career. It was a shot like she's never seen before. She's never seen anything like it. Peyton is here tonight in the gallery, and Peyton, from now on, schools will kick the men off the girls' team, or they will lose all federal funding. If you really want to see numbers, just take a look at what happened in the women's boxing, weightlifting, track and field, swimming, or cycling, where a male recently finished a long-distance race 5 hours and 14 minutes ahead of a woman for a new record by 5 hours. Broke the record by 5 hours. It's demeaning for women, and it's very bad for our country. We're not going to put up with it any longer. What I have just described is only a small fraction of the common sense revolution that is now, because of us, sweeping the entire world. Common sense has become a common theme, and we will never go back. Never. Never going to let that happen. Among my very highest priorities is to rescue our economy and get dramatic and immediate relief to working families. As you know, we inherited from the last administration an economic catastrophe and an inflation nightmare. Their policies drove up energy prices, pushed up grocery costs, and drove the necessities of life out of reach for millions and millions of Americans. They've never had anything like it. We suffered the worst inflation in 48 years, but perhaps even in the history of our country, they're not sure. As president, I'm fighting every day to reverse this damage and make America affordable again. Joe Biden especially let the price of eggs get out of control. The egg price is out of control, and we're working hard to get it back down. Secretary, do a good job on that. You inherited a total mess from the previous administration. Do a good job. A major focus of our fight to defeat inflation is rapidly reducing the cost of energy. The previous administration cut the number of new oil and gas leases by 95% slowed pipeline construction to a halt, and closed more than 100 power plants. We are opening up many of those power plants right now. And frankly, we have never seen anything like it. That's why on my first day in office, I declared a national energy emergency. As you've heard me say many times, we have more liquid gold under our feet than any nation on earth, and by far. And now I fully authorize the most talented team ever assembled to go and get it. It's called Drill Baby Drill. My administration is also working on a gigantic natural gas pipeline in Alaska, among the largest in the world, where Japan, South Korea, and other nations want to be our partner with investments of trillions of dollars each. There's never been anything like that one. It will be truly spectacular. It's all set to go. The permitting is gotten. And later this week, I will also take historic action to dramatically expand production of critical minerals and rare earths here in the USA. To further combat inflation, we will not only be reducing the cost of energy, but we'll be ending the flagrant waste of taxpayer dollars. And to that end, I have created the brand new Department of Government Efficiency, GOGE. Perhaps you've heard of it. Perhaps. Which is headed by Elon Musk, who is in the gallery tonight. Thank you, Elon. He's working very hard. He didn't need this. He didn't need this. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Everybody here, even this side, appreciates it, I believe. They just don't want to admit that. Just listen to some of the appalling waste we have already identified. $22 billion from HHS to provide free housing and cars for illegal aliens. $45 million for diversity, equity, and inclusion scholarships in Burma. $40 million to improve the social and economic inclusion of sedentary migrants. Nobody knows what that is. $8 million to promote LGBTQI+ in the African nation of Lesotho, which nobody has ever heard of. $60 million for indigenous peoples and Afro-Colombian empowerment in Central America. $60 million. $8 million for making mice transgender. This is real. $32 million for a left-wing propaganda operation in Moldova. $10 million for male circumcision in Mozambique. $20 million for the Arab Sesame Street in the Middle East. It's a program. $20 million for a program. $1.9 billion to recently created Decarbonization of Homes Committee, headed up, and we know she's involved. Just at the last moment, the money was passed over by a woman named Stacey Abrams. Have you ever heard of her? A $3.5 million consulting contract for lavish fish monitoring. $1.5 million for voter confidence in Liberia, $14 million for social cohesion in Mali, $59 million for illegal alien hotel rooms in New York City. He's a real estate developer. He's done very well. $250,000 to increase vegan local climate action innovation in Zambia. $42 million for social and behavior change in Uganda. $14 million for improving public procurement in Serbia. $47 million for improving learning outcomes in Asia. Asia's doing very well with learning. We know what we're doing. We should use it ourselves. And $101 million for DEI contracts at the Department of Education, the most ever paid, nothing even like it. Under the Trump administration, all of these scams, and they're far worse, but I didn't think it was appropriate to talk about them. They're so bad. Many more have been found out and exposed and swiftly terminated by a group of very intelligent, mostly young people, headed up by Elon, and we appreciate it. We found hundreds of billions of dollars of fraud. And we've taken back the money and reduced our debt to fight inflation and other things. Taking back a lot of that money. We got it just in time. This is just the beginning. The Government Accountability Office, a federal government office, has estimated annual fraud of over $500 billion in our nation. And we are working very hard to stop it. We're going to. We're also identifying shocking levels of incompetence and probable fraud in the Social Security program for our seniors and that our seniors and people that we love rely on. Believe it or not, government databases list 4.7 million Social Security members from people aged 100 to 109 years old. It lists 3.6 million people from ages 110 to 119. I don't know any of them. I know some people that are rather elderly, but not quite that elderly. 3.47 million people from ages 120 to 129. 3.9 million people from ages 130 to 139. 3.5 million people from ages 140 to 149. And money is being paid to many of them. And we're searching right now. In fact, Pam, good luck. Good luck. You're going to find it. But a lot of money is paid out to people because it just keeps getting paid and paid and nobody does. And it really hurts Social Security and hurts our country. 1.3 million people from ages 150 to 159 and over 130,000 people, according to the Social Security databases, are age over 160 years old. We have a healthier country than I thought, Bobby. Including, to finish, 1,039 people between the ages of 220 and 229, one person between the age of 240 and 249, and one person is listed at 360 years of age, more than 100 years, more than 100 years older than our country. But we're going to find out where that money's going, and it's not going to be pretty. By slashing all of the fraud, waste, and theft we can find, we will defeat inflation, bring down mortgage rates, lower car payments, and grocery prices, protect our seniors, and put more money in the pockets of American families. And today, interest rates took a beautiful drop, big, beautiful drop. It's about time. And in the near future, I want to do what has not been done in 24 years, balance the federal budget. We're going to balance it. With that goal in mind, we have developed in great detail what we are calling the Gold Card, which goes on sale very, very soon. For $5 million, we will allow the most successful job-creating people from all over the world to buy a path to U.S. citizenship. It's like the Green Card, but better and more sophisticated. And these people will have to pay tax in our country. They won't have to pay tax from where they came. The money that they've made, you wouldn't want to do that, but they have to pay tax, create jobs. They'll also be taking people out of colleges and paying for them so that we can keep them in our country instead of having them being forced out. Number one at the top school, as an example, being forced out and not being allowed to stay and create tremendous numbers of jobs and great success for a company out there. So while we take out the criminals, killers, traffickers, and child predators who are allowed to enter our country under the open border policy of these people, the Democrats, the Biden administration, the open border insane policies that you've allowed to destroy our country, we will now bring in brilliant, hardworking, job-creating people. They're going to pay a lot of money, and we're going to reduce our debt with that money. Americans have given us a mandate for bold and profound change. For nearly 100 years, the federal bureaucracy has grown until it has crushed our freedoms, ballooned our deficits, and held back America's potential in every possible way. The nation founded by pioneers and risk takers now drowns under millions and millions of pages of regulations and debt. Approvals that should take 10 days to get instead take 10 years, 15 years, and even 20 years before you're rejected. Meanwhile, we have hundreds of thousands of federal workers who have not been showing up to work. My administration will reclaim power from this unaccountable bureaucracy, and we will restore true democracy to America again. Federal bureaucrat who resists this change will be removed from office immediately. Because we are draining the swamp. It's very simple. And the days of rule by unelected bureaucrats are over. And the next phase of our plan to deliver the greatest economy in history is for this Congress to pass tax cuts for everybody. They're in there. They're waiting for you to vote. And I'm sure that the people on my right, I don't mean the Republican right, but my right right here, I'm sure you're going to vote for those tax cuts, because otherwise I don't believe the people will ever vote you into office. So I'm doing you a big favor by telling you that. But I know this group is going to be voting for the tax. Thank you. Thank a very, very big part of our plan. We had tremendous success in our first term with it, a very big part of our plan. We're seeking permanent income tax cuts all across the board and to get urgently needed relief to Americans hit especially hard by inflation. I'm calling for no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, and no tax on Social Security benefits for our great seniors. And I also want to make interest payments on car loans tax deductible, but only if the car is made in America. And by the way, we're going to have growth in the auto industry like nobody's ever seen. Plants are opening up all over the place. Deals are being made. Never seen. That's a combination of the election win and tariffs. It's a beautiful word, isn't it? That, along with our other policies, will allow our auto industry to absolutely boom. It's going to boom. Spoke to the majors today, all three, the top people, and they're so excited. In fact, already numerous car companies have announced that they will be building massive automobile plants in America, with Honda just announcing a new plant in Indiana, one of the largest anywhere in the world. And this has taken place since our great victory on November 5th, a date which will hopefully go down as one of the most important in the history of our country. In addition, as part of our tax cuts, we want to cut taxes on domestic production and all manufacturing. And just as we did before, we will provide 100% expensing. It will be retroactive to January 20th, 2025, and it was one of the main reasons why our tax cuts were so successful in our first term, giving us the most successful economy in the history of our country. First term. We had a great first term. If you don't make your product in America, however, under the Trump administration, you will pay a tariff, and in some cases, a rather large one. Other countries have used tariffs against us for decades, and now it's our turn to start using them against those other countries. On average, the European Union, China, Brazil, India, Mexico and Canada, have you heard of them? And countless other nations charge us tremendously higher tariffs than we charge them. It's very unfair. India charges us auto tariffs higher than 100%. China's average tariff on our products is twice what we charge them. And South Korea's average tariff is four times higher. Think of that, four times higher. And we give so much help militarily and in so many other ways to South Korea, but that's what happens. This is happening by friend and foe. This system is not fair to the United States and never was. And so on April 2nd, I wanted to make it April 1st, but I didn't want to be accused of April Fool's Day. Just one day cost us a lot of money. But we're going to do it in April. I'm a very superstitious person. April 2nd, reciprocal tariffs kick in. And whatever they tariff us, other countries, we will tariff them. That's reciprocal, back and forth. Whatever they tax us, we will tax them. If they do non-monetary tariffs to keep us out of their market, then we will do non-monetary barriers to keep them out of our market. There's a lot of that, too. They don't even allow us in their market. We will take in trillions and trillions of dollars and create jobs like we have never seen before. I did it with China, and I did it with others, and the Biden administration couldn't do anything about it because there was so much money they couldn't do anything about it. We have been ripped off for decades by nearly every country on earth, and we will not let that happen any longer. Much has been said over the last 3 months about Mexico and Canada, but we have very large deficits with both of them. But even more importantly, they've allowed fentanyl to come into our country at levels never seen before, killing hundreds of thousands of our citizens and many very young, beautiful people, destroying families. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. They are, in effect, receiving subsidies of hundreds of billions of dollars. We pay subsidies to Canada and to Mexico of hundreds of billions of dollars, and the United States will not be doing that any longer. We're not going to do it any longer. Thanks to our America First policies we're putting into place, we have had $1.7 trillion of new investment in America in just the past few weeks. The combination of the election